Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode number 53 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. Or episode 54, I'm sorry. For Tuesday, May 16, 2017. And we got an awesome WWE News and Rumors report tonight. We got news on Randy Orton getting in a Twitter war with Bully Ray. We got news on his Roman Reigns set to become the brand new Intercontinental Champion. We have Raw and SmackDown ratings from last week and some more news on JBL. So, kick back, relax, enjoy the news and rumors. And I gotta tell you guys, I'm looking forward to this, like you wouldn't believe. Got a new theme song, we're breaking out the big tools tonight. But, without further ado, let's get into the news and rumors and welcome you to episode number 54 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. Alright, there we go, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Big T. The music should have came through. I hope it did for everybody there, but anyway, tried my best, tried to break out something, but I'm your host, Big T, right here with you, and I got Sage along with us tonight. How you doing, Sage?
Yo, T, ready to get this started?
Yeah, I'm ready. Did the music come through on your end?
Yeah, I heard it.
All right, because I had my mom in here, and she was telling me that she didn't really hear the music coming through, and I was like, oh, boy.
No, I heard it.
All right, cool. I'm glad.
That, I mean, you didn't have it up all the way, which is good, because...
Yeah, I kept it, you know, a little bit lower so that way my voice would hopefully, you know, give it a little, overpower it a little bit. But,
yeah,
let's see. I'm actually double checking it right now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode number 53 of the Beyond the Ring Wrestling Podcast. On episode 54, I'm sorry, for Tuesday, May 16th,
yeah. 2017. And you can hear it a little bit. That's perfect. Alright, sorry about that, guys. Just checking out a little technical issue in the beginning. But now that we got that sorted, Sage, man. News and rumors, Roman Reigns possibly becoming Intercontinental Champion. I know you were talking about Randy Orton and Bully Ray. We could also give our thoughts on last week's Raw and SmackDown episodes. Also want to do Wrestler of the Week, which could be for any company, and then WWE Match of the Week, as to what we feel our favorite match was for last week, and that could be on any of the WWE branded shows. So we got some stuff to get to, and for those of you listening on iTunes and Podomatic, please hit that subscribe button and subscribe to the audio podcast. For those of you listening live on YouTube, because we're doing a YouTube live stream right now as well, I'm going to open up a live chat window for those of you to talk to us, and if you like, you can leave your comments down below, and as far as to how you guys feel about everything. But you know what, Sage? I just thought of something, man, and I can't believe that this slipped my mind, but...
What's that?
It's something that we gotta do for all of our regular viewers, man. The intro from the man himself, Mr. EC3. Mr. EC3's intro. I gave my intro, and for those of you that watch the show or listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that we always hear from the man himself, Mr. EC3, so what I'm going to do is, there he is on screen share, we're going to hear from the two-time TNA Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. EC3. And then after that, guys, I'm going to be right back on with you to talk about all the news and rumors along with Sage, and we're going to have a good time. So let me pull up EC3 here. All right, and then you take care, guys. Enjoy EC3, and I will be right back on with you in just 1 second. So enjoy EC3, everybody.
Well, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We heard from the man himself, Mr. EC3, Ethan Carter III, the two-time TNA Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion. And now, let me get the camera back on me and Sage here. And how did that come across, Sage? Sound good? Because I'm testing out this new sound equipment for this podcast.
It sounds fine to me, bro.
All right, perfect. Because I'm testing out new sound equipment here for the first time on the podcast, not doing an interview. So glad everything's coming across good and got that taken care of. We heard from EC3, and now finally, guys, I'm going to start off the show with a headlining story. As you see how it's titled, Roman Reigns to win the Intercontinental Championship. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the live chat window right now so you guys can chat along with us. And then I'm going to pull up this story here, and I'll read it, and we'll give our opinions on it. And then afterwards, I'm going to turn it on over to Sage, and we'll have Sage's story be the big focus of this podcast, because that is something pretty big that broke yesterday. So I want Sage to really give his opinion on that. So we'll cover the Roman Reigns stuff first here. So let me look this up. But we just got done doing the Raw review, and gotta tell you, it was better than last week's Raw, as we spoke of course. And gotta tell you, man, couldn't be happier that at least we got something different. But let's hope it, you know, from Raw tonight, let's hope they keep up a good build to Extreme Rules.
Absolutely, man. As of right now, I'm more hyped for Extreme Rules than I am for Backlash. I do want to see if Jinder's gonna ship off for Wharton, and I'm definitely looking forward to Nakamura and Ziggler. So,
oh man, Nakamura and Ziggler—that's gonna be a great match, and
hopefully
I can't wait.
Deliver.
I hope so. I'm praying, bro. I'm praying they deliver. They need to. Well, I'm sure as you guys heard, you know, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman was probably supposed to continue through Extreme Rules. But today when Braun Strowman went for surgery, the doctors discovered that Strowman's elbow was shattered, that it's worse than they expected, and Strowman is expected to miss 6 months worth of time. So Strowman ain't going to be back till around Survivor Series, if that, which is a big blow because Strowman is a very integral part to Monday Night Raw. I'm going to screen share this article here, though, for you. The credit goes to WrestlingINC, WrestlingInc.com. Let's see. And this is backstage news on Roman Reigns' next program. So, let's see what we got here. Roman Reigns, who was scheduled to feud with Braun Strowman through the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, will be facing The Miz in his next program. The feud was originally planned to begin at Extreme Rules, where Roman was set to lose an ambulance match against Braun Strowman. From there, Strowman would have moved on to Brock Lesnar, and Reigns would have moved on to The Miz. With Strowman out of action, the Reigns versus Miz feud is set to begin sooner than planned. Our sources also mentioned that the original plan was for Roman Reigns to win the Intercontinental Championship from The Miz, with the idea being that when Roman Reigns challenges Lesnar at WrestleMania 34, the Universal Championship will be the only championship that Roman has not won in the WWE. It is not known if the WWE still plans to make Reigns versus Miz an Intercontinental title program or not. The Miz is set to challenge Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental Championship this Monday on Raw. Well, what we saw tonight on Raw kind of gives me a little more of an insight as to where they may go with this, okay? Tonight on Raw, we witnessed Dean Ambrose and Miz go at it. Miz tried to go for a low blow. Ambrose blocked it, caught Miz's wrist, and then just turned around, kicked Miz right in the balls right in front of the referee. Disqualification finish. Miz wins by DQ, but Dean keeps the title. So this goes to tell me that you're going to have Miz and Ambrose at Extreme Rules. Now, if Miz wins that match at Extreme Rules, I can see it already. I can see Lesnar going up against, I would say, Finn Balor. Finn Balor's been the rumored opponent for Great Balls of Fire ever since Strowman went down. So I could see Balor going up with Lesnar, and I could see Roman going up against Miz, honestly, at Great Balls of Fire, if Miz beats Ambrose. If Miz beats Ambrose, bank on this rumor being true, I would say, but you never know. You gotta take it with a grain of salt. But if they really do put the inner IC title back on the Miz, they gotta be going in this direction. There would be no other direction for them to go in, really, if you think about it. And knowing Vince, he's gonna want Roman Reigns to have every title that the WWE has had to offer. I mean, we know he's won the tag titles, we know he's won the US title, the WWE title, never won the Universal title and never won the Intercontinental, so why doesn't Vince
tag team titles?
Oh, Roman's won tag titles with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's also won that. He's won everything except the, and the IC.
Yep, you're right. Yep.
They're gonna try to make him the, what's the Grand Slam champ?
Yeah, and I honestly, now after hearing that piece of news, I really wouldn't be surprised if Vince goes with this here, man. I mean, now that you heard me kind of dissect this and break this all down, I mean, you know how I feel. I don't like it. We're probably going to get a Warrior Hogan thing all over again from WrestleMania 6 with the Intercontinental Champ Roman Reigns going in as the title for title, and he'll be the one to beat Lesnar and be a double champ and have another crowning moment at Mania. But my God, how many crowning moments can one man have in a career for WrestleMania? But I don't know, man. Give me your thoughts on how you feel and tell the people how you feel.
Well, personally, I don't see him winning the title. However, I can see Vince trying to crown him a Grand Slam champ. Not very many stars have been Grand Slam champs. It's really the very elite that have that, and people like Michaels, people like Bret Hart, you know, those guys have been Grand Slam champs. And I believe that Vince sees Reigns in the same vein as he sees Shawn Michaels and a Bret Hart, and can see them doing that. However, I have to disagree, and I don't think they will, because I think the end goal is for him to beat Lesnar. You know what I mean? I believe that is the end goal, and the end goal is to give him a third coronation at least a second coronation at WrestleMania. He's already a three-time WWE champ, as you mentioned, former United States champ, and also a former tag team champ. With the exception of the IC and the Universal title, he hasn't won. So I think the end goal here is for him to win the big one at Mania against Lesnar, because I don't see anybody who could believably beat him besides Samoa Joe, and they're not going to do a heel Samoa Joe versus a tweener Lesnar. That's not going to work.
No, I mean, you're right. It's, I don't know, man. I just can't help but feel this impending doom, should I say. Like, we're going to be sitting there at the end of WrestleMania 34 being like, wow, Vince actually went through with it. And I don't know, man.
It's, he did it at 32. And he did it again at 33. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if they have him beat Lesnar.
Yeah.
As much to the dismay of us fans not wanting to see him do it, he will. He will. And it's going to be, he's going to get the same reaction that he got to beating Undertaker.
And plus, if you really think about it, man, you know, it's like Vince is just not going to be happy till he does what he does. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's Vince's company. He'll do what he wants when really he should be listening to his fans, but you know, he just feels the total opposite for some reason. But hey, you know, sometimes this business, man, it's like a harsh mistress, you know? It really is. It's like, or no, I shouldn't say like a harsh mistress. Maybe it's like a wife or a girlfriend that doesn't love you back sometimes, you know? Like you fall in love with it, you love the business so much, and then it's like, in return, it just gives you nothing. You know, it just gives you heartache, pain. And sad part is there's nothing we can do. I mean, we can try to speak up, like how we did with Daniel Bryan, but it's like, the most screwed up part is, for some reason, they caved in with Daniel Bryan. But with this whole thing, it's like they will not cave in with the whole Roman Reigns issue, no matter how much the fans speak. They don't care.
It's really sad. It's a sad day in the world of wrestling where the fans tell you over and over again, that's not who we want. That's not our guy. And they refuse to listen. And in a way, I can see why WWE refuses to budge. Maybe they feel like they think that us wrestling fans, we feel too entitled, that whenever we say do something, that they should jump and do it just to appease us. And I understand them having resentment towards that and not wanting to give us our way, because at the end of the day, it is their product and they're going to push who they want and they're going to get behind who they want to get behind, regardless of what we have to say about that. However, when you look at this business as a whole, the professional wrestling business isn't unlike any other business in the world. You know, yes, everything is scripted. Yes, everything is predetermined. However, wrestling has always been a business that goes on the reactions of the crowd. Just look at Lex Luger. When Lex Luger was built to be the top guy, to be the next quote unquote face of the company, and they had him do the whole Lex Express tour and being Captain America, you know, per se, he wasn't over. He wasn't getting over, and he wasn't clicking with the fans the way that management saw him or wanted him to be. And the fans let them know that, yo, this is not our guy. This is not who we want. We want Bret Hart. And what did they do? They put the strap on Bret Hart. And, yeah. And that was possibly the best decision that they've ever made, because in the long run, look what it accomplished. It accomplished a lot for Bret Hart. And he was damn near going to be the champion for the next 20 years. He was going to sign a 20-year deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Bret Hart, it was amazing, man.
And he became a legend. And even though that's not who they wanted, he was too, quote-unquote, small. He wasn't larger than life, like, you know, Vince and company-like. However, it wasn't about his size. It was about his in-ring prowess, his ability, his athletic ability, how good he was in the mat, his psychology. Yeah, he wasn't the best on the mic, but he was phenomenal in ring. He was second to none. And when it comes to Roman Reigns, he's not Bret Hart. He's more Lex Luger.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You know what? I've never heard anyone really use an analogy like that for Roman Reigns, but I gotta tell you, you hit it right on the head. You did.
That's why I'm doing this podcast with you, brother.
But the difference is with WWE, yeah, you're absolutely right. 94, they heard the fans, they knew Luger wasn't gonna work. They gave us Bret. Bret got the strap and made it 10. In but grand fashion.
But another thing that we have to take into consideration is that back in 94, WWE was struggling. They just lost Razor and Nash. Ratings were in the shitter. They really had no real superstar, as they like to coin the phrase. And WCW was beginning to pick up steam. They started to get steam and going into 95 and 96 with the whole NWO and them acquiring Hogan, they had to pull the trigger on somebody. And eventually that man became Austin. But prior to that, it was Hart. It was Bret Hart and before they decided on Bret Hart, it was Luger. And in this case, it's Reigns. And we don't want Reigns. We want a Sami Zayn. We want a Cesaro. We want, you know, a Balor. You know, we want a Rollins. But to them, they're all, to WWE, all those guys are secondary players. They're background players. They're not the main attraction. They're not the main guy. They're not the protagonists of this never-ending movie or TV series, you know, because that's really what WWE is, right?
Yeah, pretty much, man.
And to them, it's Reigns. And I don't know how much more they're going to keep pushing him until they finally realize, hey, you know what? Maybe they were right. Maybe he's not the guy. But Vince is stubborn as fuck, and I don't see him caving in now. He didn't cave in for 32. He didn't cave in for 33. And he sure as hell isn't going to cave in moving forward.
Yeah, but you go to this point, putting the IC title on him and the Universal title at once, and if that's Brock's last match in the WWE, because don't forget, that's Brock's last night under contract. If he don't sign a new deal between now and Mania 34.
I see Mania 34. Deal.
I do too, and I really hope he does. But it just like makes me wonder, what if? What if he doesn't? What if he doesn't? And Lesnar goes out the door, and there's another guy that Roman basically retired. Taker. Brock. Plus think of the WrestleMania resume that Reigns is going to have. I've been hearing things come through the cracks, which, you know, maybe if there's more news gathered on it by tomorrow, we could talk about it on News and Rumors tomorrow night. But just to give everybody a little preview, I'm already hearing rumblings of Roman Reigns versus The Rock at like WrestleMania 35 or 36. And then finally, probably at WrestleMania 36, like one of his last manias, Roman then will go on with Cena. So basically, in Roman's first like six manias, you're going to have a main event with Lesnar, Triple H, Taker, Lesnar probably at 34, then The Rock at 35, and then Cena at 36. That'd be six fucking main event coronations for Roman Reigns. If everything falls into place the way they're talking. And I'll tell you one thing, if John Cena gets in that ring to go up against Roman Reigns, I guarantee you that'll be the first match ever where Cena will be cheered, revered. Everybody will be rooting for him. There will be nobody on the Roman bandwagon. There will be no mixed crowd for that match. Everybody will be for John Cena. That will be the only time you'll ever see that. Everybody will be for John Cena. I guarantee it, if they really do go that far. So, I mean, you look at that. Who else has had that? Who else has had that mania resume, Sage? In singles matches.
Not very many people, I'll tell you that much.
I mean, that's a crazy resume. And the thing is, the way they're booking it, he'll have beat them all. He didn't beat Lesnar at 31, but by the way, it's shaping up. 32 beat Triple H, 33 beat Undertaker, 34 finally beat Lesnar, 35 probably beat The Rock, 36 beat Cena.
And listen, I'd be all for it if they'd make the right decision by turning him heel. But the fact, yep, the fact that he remains a face, it makes it that much. They're already shoving him down our throats, but the fact that he remains to turn heel makes it even more difficult to swallow.
Yeah.
Sorry to make that analogy. It doesn't sound very PG or whatever, but that's the fact of the matter.
It is, man. It definitely is. And you know, we'll see what happens as we go forward with this. But I'm looking in the chat here, and Redicus came in the chat, and he says, "Big T, what's going on, guys? Hey, brother, how you doing, Redicus?" But yeah, we'll see what happens with Roman Reigns going forward. But I don't know. Expect to see a lot of Roman Reigns in Mania main event situations.
Oh man!
But until
speaking of Reigns and main event, let's not forget that he main evented 33 without, yep, there even being a title on the line.
Yeah,
and as I mentioned to you before, the championship is supposed to close out Mania, close out the pay-per-view, no matter who holds the strap. But because it's Roman Reigns, he's the one that has to do the honors and close it out, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the only time, honestly, that I was for the championship not closing WrestleMania was at 26 when they had Taker and HBK. Street versus career. Because honestly, with the title matches, as much as I love Jericho and Edge, the way they booked that was not something you'd see really as a show closer. And Cena and Batista, you know, we saw that before. I don't think it was really a show closing type match, but that streak versus career and plus the way the match went at 25 to do it again at 26. And I think that was the only time I was for the championship not going on last. To be honest with you. In every other scenario, it's always been about the championship for me, just like you. Championship should go on last. I felt this year that Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton should have went on last. They had a long enough build for it. They built the match long enough, and when Orton burned the Wyatt family compound down to the ground, they gave it enough heat. But then once Orton burned the compound down to the ground, it's like they just killed the build to that feud. Dead in its tracks. And that's probably because they wanted Taker and Roman to be the focal point. And it happened, so. Oh, man. And then if Roman main events against Lesnar, and then main events against The Rock, and main events against Cena, that's 6 main events. And I think the record for most show closing is held by what? Like Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker with 5 each, 4 or 5 each. So Roman's probably going to break the record for most show closing matches ever at Mania. Wouldn't surprise me, though.
I mean, he already has the most eliminations in Royal Rumble history.
Yeah. I mean, they're just going to keep adding it on with him, brother. But,
that's what it seems like. It's only a matter of time before they just start. I mean, they're already on that track, but to book him completely unbeatable.
Like, yeah.
Completely unbeatable, unpinnable, unable to even tap him out.
I'm afraid that's gonna happen, man. One of these times. I really am. But, let's move on from Roman Reigns' situation over to JBL. Good old JBL. Let me put the screen share on this. And yeah, you're reading this right, people. You really are. When you're reading this headline, it's like, just take a look at this. WWE News, JBL mentions ISIS when talking about Sami Zayn on Bring It to the Table. JBL mentions ISIS when discussing Muslim wrestler Sami Zayn on WWE Network's Bring It to the Table. This is on sportskeedia.com. And let's see. Let's go down to start. Well, what's the story? JBL is at it again. Heavy.com reports on this week's edition of WWE Network's Bring It to the Table program. John Bradshaw Layfield mentioned ISIS when talking about Sami Zayn and of his Muslim and of Syrian descent. In case you didn't know, JBL has been in the news for the better part of the last month due to bullying accusations from a handful of former WWE employees. Justin Roberts details significant bullying involving Layfield in his new book, Best Seat in the House, Your Backstage Pass Through My WWE Journey. The accusations are serious in nature and detail JBL terrorizing a coworker. These bullying accusations towards JBL are not new, as other notable WWE stars such as Mark Henry, Sean Devari, Matt Hardy, Rene Dupree, Ivory, and The Miz have each described similar situations throughout the years. More recently, JBL has been linked with Mauro Ranallo's departure from the WWE. Rumors have swirled, but nothing official has come out, as Ranallo has signed a non-disclosure agreement with the WWE. Rumors have swirled, but nothing official has... Why does it say it twice? It really does. It says it twice here. Rumors have swirled, but nothing official has come out as Ronaldo has signed a non-disclosure agreement with WWE. Okay, good way to put it in there twice, Sports Kenya. JBL is a veteran. He's been world champion and has had feuds with many legends, including The Undertaker, John Cena, Shawn Michaels, Batista, Eddie Guerrero, and more. He retired from in-ring competition in 2009 and currently is a commentator on SmackDown Live. So what's the heart of the matter here? If all the recent heat on JBL wasn't enough, he decided to go there while on a WWE program on Bring It to the Table when talking about Sami Zayn, who is Muslim and of Syrian descent. JBL said, "I would rather be captured by ISIS than have to have dinner with Sami Zayn." It's right there in black and white. You can read it on the screen if you're watching on YouTube right now. JBL said, "I would rather be captured by ISIS than have to have dinner with Sami Zayn." JBL was in the midst of discussing his dislike for Zayn when the comment was made. How fucking disgusting is that? A viewer actually put this up on Twitter, Kelsey, and I am Kelsey91. She put, "WWE, how are you going to let this comment by JBL about Sami Zayn slide and completely ignore it? It is really disgusting. Hashtag fire JBL. So what's next? For years, JBL has been like a cat with nine lives in the WWE. His luck may have just run out, and this could be the last straw. ISIS is not a topic to be taken lightly or joked about. They are a radical group who have brutally murdered people all around the world. Just invoking that group alone is stupid, is beyond stupid and careless. Invoking that group when discussing a wrestler and colleague who is Muslim is also beyond stupid and careless. But in addition, it roots itself in the bullying that JBL has been accused of for years. The WWE is obsessed with appealing to the mainstream. With ISIS being such an important topic in the news, WWE officials are not going to defend one of their own who has the group's name in a humorous fashion with bullying undertones." So let's see. What's the final word here? JBL needed to be fired from the WWE a long time ago. He is a guy that just can't seem to grasp the direction in which the world is going. Bullying is not tolerable in a publicly traded company any longer. Period. There's no discussing that simple fact. For that reason alone, he should be gone, and good people like Mauro Ranallo should be in his seat and collecting his paycheck instead. And this latest controversy of him saying he would rather be captured by ISIS than to have dinner with Sami Zayn? Career suicide. Collecting his paycheck instead. Let's see. And this latest controversy, they typed it in twice again. Alright, never mind. First of all, no, he wouldn't. And it's a laughable comparison to begin with. Second of all, Sami Zayn is Muslim, and it is disrespectful to invoke that group when talking about him. It shows JBL is tone deaf at the very best, but given his history of bullying, one has to assume he chose his words carefully to get at Zayn. Regardless, his time is up. He used his last WWE cat life, and the company needs to let JBL go. I mean,
completely agree with everything stated.
Yep, I mean, that's the only thing that I really could say is here throughout all this in the ending take. I agree with it. How is JBL? How is he still employed? I mean, did you hear about him making a statement like that about Sami Zayn?
Yeah, I remember reading. I didn't read the full article, but I remember reading the headline, and it's unfathomable to me how this man is still employed by WWE, a company, as the article mentioned, that is a publicly traded company. It's one of the, it is the biggest professional wrestling company in the world. And with a history of bullying such as JBL, which it's not just hearsay. It's not just one or two people that come out saying these things, you know, just to try to, you know, get him to get fired or try to undermine him. No, 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 no. This is years and years and years that this has been going on. And this man has gotten away relatively scot-free without ever having, without ever having to get reprimanded for any of his actions. And it's really appalling, man. And it's sad. It's sad that they essentially condone this behavior, because what that tells me is, hey, I could talk shit about anybody. I could bully anybody and get away with it and still get paid
How much you want to bet it? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, bud.
I was going to say, especially amidst the whole Marv Rinaldo thing, which has made mainstream headline news, you know, it's not just something that's just in the wrestling world. This is something that has made, you know, mainstream news, and still nothing with this man. And on top of all of that, we've seen the videos. You saw the video last week when we were reviewing SmackDown, that there was video footage of the fans overseas, across continents, chanting "Fire Bradshaw." People in the UK were chanting "Fire Bradshaw." It's not just something that's in the smarky towns. No, this is going on throughout the United States and throughout overseas as well. How is this man still employed?
I don't understand it. I mean, honestly, with Rinaldo, it doesn't surprise me that JBL didn't get fired for that, because the last report that I heard, I can't tell you guys if it's true because we don't know, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. And the sad part is, I should say that it surprises me, but it really doesn't when I heard it all. Supposedly the reason why JBL was going hard on Rinaldo the way that he did was because Vince McMahon, he never really liked Rinaldo's style. Reportedly, he said that he doesn't like the way Mauro Rinaldo calls matches.
He wanted him to sound more like Michael Cole.
Yeah, and the thing is, Vince McMahon knows that Mauro Rinaldo had, you know, a mental condition, you know, with his bipolar disorder that he has. And the whole thing is, instead of being a normal human being and a good boss, you know, the way a normal boss would handle things by saying, you know what, listen, I want you to be more like this, or, you know what, this isn't working out, you gotta go a separate way.
Vince, or not only that, put him on Raw. Separate him. Separate Vince, him. You don't have to fire Vince one just or the felt- other. Keep him separated. Put him on NXT. Keep him away from each other where they don't have to contact. You don't have to. This man, JBL, drove Rinaldo away. And the sad part is, he had no escape because Vince condones this. He condones this. Because Vince feels like, and in retrospective, yes, professional wrestling, you have to have thick skin. You have to have thick skin to be in that business. That's not a business for the weak at heart or the weak at mind. And you have to go through a lot of shit in order to reach the top. This is understandable. As with any business, you know, you have to work your way up and prove, hey, I fucking belong here. But Marv Rinaldo, since coming into the company, has proved he is the best play-by-play commentary guy. He is the best. He brought life to what we saw before our eyes in that ring. He gave it life. He made it feel real. He called it the way that he was calling MMA matches prior to coming to WWE. And they lost a good hand. They lost a good voice. They lost a good commentary play-by-play guy all because Vince and JBL are BFFs, and Vince condones JBL's behavior. He lets him go around bullying people without reprimanding him. This man sexually harassed Edge in the fucking shower. He sexually harassed Edge. Bro, and you know, because of WWE's or WWF's, formerly WWF's, history of the sex scandal, the Ring Boy scandal that went on back in the day with Pat Patterson and all those other guys, I can see why Vince condones that. He allows that shit to happen. He allows that shit to happen. This shit reminds me of the fucking Catholic Church with the fucking with the popes and the cardinals touching those little boys inappropriately, you know?
It's sad, you know, and it's like, man, the sickest part about the whole thing is if it's true. Whole thing or not is we don't know if it's true, but if this is true,
I believe it.
I do too. I mean, it went on to say that Vince, I guess, reportedly talked to JBL. He told JBL, listen, I don't like how the way this guy's calling matches. I want him out. I don't just want to fire him, you know, but, you know, there's got to be a way for us to like push him out the door. And he's like, you know, can you start getting on him and being hard on him, and then hopefully, you know, we'll push him out the door. Like Vince wanted JBL to bully Ranallo because he knew Ranallo had bipolar, and he wanted Ranallo just to break down mentally and walk out. That was basically Vince's MO there. That's why
it seems like,
and it's sick. You know, it really goes to show you how sick in the head mentally Vince McMahon really is. Like, if you can't just pull
a
guy...
He's senile.
Yeah. You can't just pull a guy to the side and be like, you know what? I want to go in a different direction. This isn't what I want for my business. You know what? Fine, you're making a dumb choice, but still, do that to the man rather than put him through mental torture where he doesn't even want to come to work and you got to force him out the door that way. That's
I just don't understand. Like, why couldn't you just switch brands? Either put Ranallo on Raw, put Cole on SmackDown, or put JBL on Raw and bring either Graves on SmackDown. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Simple as that. You didn't have to fire him, but because Vince didn't like him, I'm pretty sure on top of the fact that he was calling better matches than Cole, and you know Cole is another one of Vince's butt buddies. Because he's calling matches better than Cole, making Cole look like an amateur, his job, doing his job. And to a lesser extent, I'm pretty sure it's because he's fucking Canadian as well, and he doesn't like Canadians. And yeah. I'm pretty sure the same can be said about JBL. He doesn't like quote-unquote foreigners. And Sami Zayn, not only is he a Muslim of Syrian descent, he's also Canadian. So
yeah,
those three things, it doesn't suit Vince and JBL's super right wing, super conservative views and ways, and he should be reprimanded. And it shouldn't have taken this long for people to not only start noticing, but for Vince to start feeling a little bit of the heat on JBL and try to get him to, hey, you're going to have to tone down whatever you're saying. Cause I know that's all that's going to happen. Hey, you know, try to tone back, try to hold back whatever you say, this and that and the third. Dude, you shouldn't have to give him a pep talk. You need to fucking have him work in the back where he's not out in the camera's view, or get rid of his ass. Get rid of his ass.
If Triple H was running this company, I think JBL's ass would have been long gone. But Vince, he likes to hold on to guys like JBL and Kevin Dunn and...
Yeah.
You know, just all these guys that should not be there. It seems like these are the guys that are hooked up with Vince and that Vince actually likes. And it's just... I don't know. It just really goes to show you, though, what kind of man is Vince McMahon for real? like in real life? What kind of man is he really?
Not only like yeah, not he only that, but JBL isn't JBL supposed to be really cool with Undertaker?
Yeah, I don't get that, man. And I know they're real cool because Undertaker was a groomsman in JBL's wedding.
So how the fuck can Undertaker not say anything about the granted? Yeah, he's not there every week. He's not there to talk to anybody or whatever, but I'm sure when it comes to rank, Taker's rank is way higher than JBL's. How the fuck is Taker okay with this behavior?
If he won't listen to anybody,
Taker, if JBL won't listen to anybody and keep doing his thing, yo, have Taker go and talk to him. Like, yo, relax, all right? You're getting too wild. You're going to have to relax, or else we're going to have to do something that you're going to fucking regret. So, I don't know.
It's like he did with Shawn Michaels with the whole Austin thing.
Yeah. Yep. And Mike learned his place. He did the right thing because he didn't want to face Undertaker.
No, he did the job real fucking quick.
Mm-hmm.
JBL did. I mean, that wasn't even, that wasn't even an issue anymore at that point. But I'm trying to find this picture so everyone knows what I'm talking about here. For the YouTube viewers. Let's see if I can blow this up. Alright, there we go. This is how you know that Taker and JBL are indeed very tight. There's no doubt. As you can see in this photo here, for those of you watching on YouTube, the top photo has a full picture of JBL and his wife on the left, and there's all the groomsmen, Ron Simmons, you know, The Undertaker, Bruce Pritchard, Eddie Guerrero, a couple of guys I really don't know. But as you see in the bottom picture, look at JBL in the middle, and you got Ron Simmons on one side of him, and you got Taker on the other side of him just smiling with JBL. Like, you can clearly see that, they're tight, man. For God's sakes, you know, Taker was a groomsman in the wedding of JBL. So, you know, Taker's been around it. Taker's got to know about JBL and, his actions and stuff that he's done. Actually, here's an even clearer. That's actually the same picture. Sorry, that's not a different one. But yeah, as you saw in the picture, isn't that something, man? With JBL and Taker? Let's see. You still there, man? Let's see. Sage, can you hear me? Yo. Hello? Am I coming through?
You hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Alright.
Yeah, I just blacked out for a little bit.
Oh, it did? The stream was screwing up for a bit?
Yeah, sort of. I couldn't hear you for a little bit.
What did you think of that whole thing with the picture of Taker and JBL?
Oh, no. I knew they were real tight. I knew they were real tight. But if anybody's going to talk to JBL, if it's not going to be Vince himself, let it be Taker.
Yeah.
Let him know, hey man, you're gonna have to fall back. You're gonna have to relax with some of the things that you're saying.
Let's hope something happens, man, because this behavior can't go on tolerated forever. And, they need to clean things up. But, I know before we spend a good part of this podcast, Sage, talking about Bully Ray and Randy Orton and, you know, get all of our opinions out there. And I want to go over the Raw and SmackDown ratings viewership for last week, May 8th and May 9th. For the May 8th episode of Raw, WWE Raw ratings viewership for May 2017, Monday, May 2017. Lowest audience of the year. Let's see. Oh, I forgot to get this on screen share for you guys. So that way you guys can see what I'm doing. All right, Raw ratings. All right, there we go. There we go. So as you can see, everything I just said, lowest view, lowest audience of the year. Raw struggled last week, as we all talked about. But the WWE Raw ratings and viewership figures are in for the May 1st edition. It must be a typo, because up there it did say May 8th. And let's see. The news is not good. Last night's flagship show from London. Yeah, this was May 8th. They did a typo there. Did not bring in the viewers, did not keep them, and was honestly difficult to watch at best. The tape show, which featured more Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns drama, The Miz facing off with Finn Balor, Dean Ambrose and Miz sharing general manager duties at a main event featuring Bray Wyatt and Ambrose, did not manage to break the 3 million viewer mark for any hour of the show. This week's flagship show drew an average of 2.696 million viewers. This is down from last week's 2.87 million viewers, and it is the lowest audience Raw has garnered in 2017. Hour one, the first hour, 2.827 million viewers. It was 2.924 million viewers on May 1st. Second hour, 2.845 million viewers. On May 1st, it was 3.039 million viewers. And the third hour, big drop, 2.417 million viewers. To May 1st episode with 2.649 million viewers. And Raw was number two on cable for the night in viewership, falling behind the NBA playoffs. Raw was number four in the 18 to 49 demographic, falling behind the NBA game, Street Outlaws, and Love and Hip Hop in the coveted 18 to 49 demographic. Raw drew a .92 cable rating in the 18 to 49 demographic, drew a .92 cable rating. It didn't even draw a 1 in the 18 to 49 demographic. This is down from last week's 1.01 rating in the same demographic. All I can say about the last several weeks of declining audience numbers and cable ratings is, oof, not a good sign. Before I check SmackDown, Sage, you got any words you want to say about those ratings that I just read?
Nope. Well, I'd say something real quick, and it's they better start getting those numbers up before football season starts.
Yeah, because once
football season starts, they're going to drop even more.
Oh, when football season starts, they're going to lose, you know, a good portion of the viewers that they even have now. So, yeah, they better start building up some extra viewers. I mean, it's fallen into a place, man, where I never thought I'd see it fall, honestly. It's shocking. But then again, the way that they've been going with things, can't say I'm really surprised. Let's see. Let's do the same website for SmackDown here. And let me get this on the screen share for you guys. All right. So there, as you can clearly see for SmackDown Live, for Tuesday, May 9, 2017. WWE SmackDown ratings viewership for Tuesday, May 9, 2017. Blue brand gains viewers this week. Alright, come on, scroll down. Cooperate with me, computer. Alright. The WWE SmackDown ratings data and viewership information is in for this week's show, and the blue brand managed to gain some viewers after the falling, the show fell to its lowest audience of the year last week. Last night's episode, which was on tape delay from London's O2 Arena. Wow. I can't believe it fell to its lowest audience of the year the week before. Now Raw fell to that. You know, the week prior, that's crazy. But, let's see, from O2's London Arena and featured a face-off between Dolph Ziggler and Shinsuke Nakamura and a six-man tag team main event where Jinder Mahal won for his team by pinning the WWE champion Randy Orton. The show drew 2.348 million viewers. This is up 2% from last week's 2.300 million viewers. 2.348. Which, was a new low for the blue brand in 2017. It is kind of surprising that SmackDown Live managed to gain viewers this week with their taped episode. Monday's episode of Raw lost viewers, garnered their lowest audience in 2017. There's a message in there somewhere. SmackDown Live was number 10 in viewership on cable for the night, falling behind the NBA playoffs on TNT. Inside the NBA, Rachel Maddow, Tucker Carlson, Hannity, The Story, The Five, All In, and Special Report. SmackDown Live was number 3 in the 18 to 49 demographic, falling behind the NBA game and Inside the NBA. Last night's cable episode drew a .74 cable rating in the coveted 18 to 49 demographic for last night's episode. This is a notch down from last week's 0.75 cable rating in the same demographic. Wow. I'm mind blown, people. I'm mind blown. These are actual ratings for WWE that I just read. And both of the final ratings, I'm sure, is like in the 1.9 or 1.8 overall. When you take these these viewerships and you break them down, I wish it had that number in there. But, yeah, WWE is severely suffering. My God, I mean, is it possible that they go under? I mean, is it possible that there's going to be no coming back from this and they're going to go under or what? I mean, I don't even know what to say. I'm shocked. Because the whole thing is here, they were pulling in numbers this bad and doing all-time lows when WCW was around. Now there's no wrestling company to rival them and they're pulling numbers this bad. I mean, what does that tell you? I'm at a loss
for words. They're complacent.
They're happy with 3 million viewers a week. That's like all they look for anymore.
Well, remember, we have the network now. More people stream than ever before. People watch the clips on YouTube. Whatever they didn't see, if they didn't watch the show live, they could just go on YouTube and see the most important clips, and that's it. So technically, they don't really have to tune in. But it just goes to show you how little they care about that anymore.
Yeah, because it used to be back in the day, man. People, they were on the ball. They cared. It's like, oh my God, I gotta be home for Raw. I gotta be home for SmackDown. I'm gonna miss something. I remember when I used to be like that when I was a little kid and a teenager. Now it's like I'll just set it, you know, to record on a DVD, and if I see it, I see it. You know, I'll see it when I get back. Like, I went to see GOAT, for God's sakes, you know, during Raw Monday night when it was May 1st. And, you know, I usually never miss Raw, but, you know, I'll pretty much do anything if – even if it's going out somewhere with my mom, you know, I can record it and tune into it later. I mean, it's not what it used to be where you just can't miss it. It's like,
nope.
You can stand to miss it and you'll come home and you'll still be like, oh, I didn't really miss anything tonight because this is where they're at. It's like you can pick up right where they left off, man, even if you missed half the show. And why is it that way? Because there's no storytelling. None. Nada.
There's no competition.
No. No competition.
That's why storytelling. That's why I'm hoping that when New Japan has their show here in a few months, I believe in July, I think, either June or July, that they have their
June tournament. June 11th, I think it's on.
That they have their tournament here. That they kill it, and I hope they pull in a lot of people tuning in, and a lot of people show out to the live events, so that they can show, hey, WWE isn't the only fucking big fish out here. You know? New Japan is a big company, and they just need to get their Western market up.
Well, isn't Okada and Omega 2 scheduled for June 11th?
For Dominion, yep. I don't know if it's the 11th. I don't know the exact date, but, they're gonna face each other again.
I can't believe they're pulling the trigger so soon. It's like when I saw it, I was happy, but then again, I was kind of let down because I wanted that. I really wanted that for Wrestle Kingdom.
Hey, who knows? That there's no guarantee that Kenny's gonna win. He could lose, or he could win, and then they could have the third blow off match at Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Yeah, I mean that's a good way to kind of make it best of three.
Yes, it is June 11th. But it's not going to be here in the United States. That's going to be over there in Japan, in Osaka Jo Hall. I'm talking about they're going to have they're going to come out here to California, actually. They're going to have a show in California.
Oh, wow. I wish I was there, so bro.
I'm hoping there's a big turnout and a lot of people show up for it. Because that's what I want. I want there to be competition, and I want them to show, hey, WWE isn't the only player out here. We got other players.
Yeah, because if they get a good response in the US over here, they're gonna be coming back for more shows, and that's gonna put a damper in WWE real quick.
Yes. And this past weekend, I think it was either Friday night or Saturday night, Ring of Honor had their yearly pay-per-view called War of the Worlds. And it's where Ring of Honor stars face New Japan stars once a year. And it was here in New York. And you'd be surprised, man. A lot of the New Japan stars that came out, the fans popped hard for them. Who knew who they were. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about
that. Oh, and it's gonna be, their G1 Climax tournament is gonna be in Long Beach Convention Center in California, and that's in July.
Oh, nice. You know what?
So it's their G1 tournament. Their G1 tournament is possibly the biggest tournament of the year for them. And it's going to be here.
I think I might
here see, in the United States.
I think I might see a little strategy on what New Japan is doing now that I know they're coming to the United States. Is it possible, and you tell me this, is it possible that they're gonna have Kenny Omega win, even though Kenny Omega, I think he's Canadian, I believe, but you know, Kenny Omega's wrestled in America. He knows American very well. Is it possible that they want Kenny Omega to win the title so that way when they come up here to the States, he'll be the heavyweight champion, which means he can do the main promoting around here in the States for the New Japan yep. show coming to LA.
Yes, this is unlikely. Very likely, very, very likely that this is the strategy. Now, that he'll win, but regardless, he wants to be the top guy, as anybody would want to be the top guy in their respective companies. But if they do this, then definitely it's because they want to get that Western market, and they know over here, so.
Because trying to advertise with the American market, I mean, no doubt everybody knows who Okada is. He's a big star. But you know, more people know who Omega is. People in America would rather see the strap on Omega. People in America would rather have Omega doing the promotional work, I'm sure. Plus, he can speak English well.
Not to mention, he's fluent. And he's fluent in both languages. He's fluent in English and in Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I'm looking at it as
he's definitely the guy that they're gonna put a lot of weight on. They're gonna have a lot riding on Omega. Because this is the guy who can essentially make or break the company, you know, when it comes to them expanding out here to the West. Make or break that company, man. And I hope they do right by him and put the strap on him. But I hope they don't just put the strap on him. Oh, yeah, we'll put the strap on him just because we want to expand. Kind of like the whole Jinder Mahal, Randy Orton situation. WWE's trying to expand into India, and they're trying to get that Indian crowd, that Indian audience. You know, they want them to buy merch, and they want them somebody that they can latch onto, somebody that's, you know, their own. And Jinder Mahal is, and the Bollywood Boys is, you know, they're Canadian, but they are of Indian descent. So they want to get that niche market over there, and they want them to have somebody that the fans can latch onto and can get behind, and that's Jinder Mahal. So I hope they don't just put the strap on Jinder because of that, and I hope New Japan doesn't put the strap on Omega just because of that. Like, I hope that if you're going to put the strap on this person, it's because you feel that this guy can take the company to the next level and can make it a viable competitor for WWE.
I hope so too, man. I really do. I hope they do right because, you know, Omega, he deserves the best. You know, he deserves to be the top player. And, you know,
Omega right now is in my top five guys not signed to WWE. And he's probably the number one right now.
Oh. Dude,
not
Omega.
Signed to WWE. Omega, the Young Bucks, Ricochet. I love Ricochet. I love Will Ospreay. I like Ricochet more than Ospreay, but I like him just about, you know, they're pretty even to me because they put on such great matches. Marty Scurll. There's so many good guys that I would like to see them in WWE, but I fear for them. I fear that they're not going to be utilized correctly. I fear that if a guy like Ricochet comes into WWE, they're going to fucking put him in the cruiserweight division because he's under 205 pounds. He's only like 197 pounds.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, I fear for the same reasons you do too, because we know how WWE is, and we know how Vince is and Kevin Dunn. As soon as they, you know, they lack. And then it just throws someone's career away, like Omega. Can you imagine Omega coming to WWE?
What's that, bro? I can't hear you.
Can you imagine Omega being brought in to do the cruiserweight division in WWE?
Bro, I could barely hear you. You sound far away.
Wouldn't it be crazy if they had Omega in the cruiserweight division in WWE?
To have who there?
Omega.
Well, I'm looking at his Wikipedia right now, and it says he weighs 203 pounds. So he's right under 205.
Wow. WWE, they would probably look at him. They'd probably be like, ah, Kenny Omega. He's,
Yeah, but I think Triple H knows he's a main eventer.
Triple H, definitely, he does. He really does.
I think he's aware that he's a main eventer, man.
But
it would be counterproductive for them to believe that he's not a main eventer. I mean, this man put on one of the greatest matches of the year. We're only 5 months into the year, and that match is already considered a freaking classic. Possibly one of the greatest matches of all time. And I don't take Meltzer's word as the law. I don't take it as the fucking Bible or whatever. But I do respect Meltzer's opinions. And I do respect, you know, his input on things. Now, I wouldn't say who am I to say, oh, it's a 5-star match or it's a 6-star match? I'm nobody, but wrestling is subjective and you have your opinions. I have my opinions. Everyone has their own opinions on what they believe is makes a good match. But for this man to be doing this as long as he has, and I'm talking about Meltzer, who's been in the wrestling business since about the 70s. He's been in this business since the 70s. He's been reporting on numos and rumors and backstage ongoings in WWE. And not just WWE, but professional wrestling in general. To have seen as much matches as he has and been through it all before any of us were even born, for him to say that that is a 6-star match, that is saying a lot. And again, I'm not taking his word as law or as the Bible, but 3 or 4 times already myself.
Well.
And to me, it gets better each time. And the only sad part is that he doesn't win.
Yep. And the one thing that they did that was absolutely fucking brilliant. And see, a lot of people won't catch on to this, even if they watch the match. The best thing is they didn't even have him hit the one wing angel. They protected one wing angel throughout a 50 fucking minute match. He did
pretty
not
much an hour. Pretty much an hour.
Yep. And they knew he wasn't going to win, so they didn't have him hit the one wing angel.
And you know what? They're facing each other in July at Dominion. But one thing to take into consideration, usually the challenger obviously challenges the champion for the title. Right?
Yeah.
Well, in this rematch that they're going to have, the champion challenged Omega.
Wow.
Okada challenged Omega.
Wow.
He had his match was it that he faced? Fale, right?
Yeah,
he faced Fale. And after the match, usually in New Japan, as is tradition, the champion or the winner of the main event, which is 9 times out of 10 mm-hmm. the champion, he cuts a little promo, like to send the crowd home happy or whatever. And, you know, obviously I don't speak Japanese or understand Japanese, so I don't know what's being said, but, you know, as he's cutting his promo, the Bullet Club comes out to help Fale backstage, because Fale is all beat up and stuff. And, you know, they have him draped over their shoulders, or they're taking him towards the back. And they're all walking towards backstage. Okada stops Omega and calls him to the ring.
Wow.
And he challenges him. Now, obviously, I don't know what was said, but he said that he challenged him for a rematch. And this was the champion doing that. So that's another thing that's to take into consideration. Like, oh shit, you know?
And plus, the reason why I see Omega having to win is because if Okada wins again, I don't know how Omega's gonna work his way up in the ranks after losing twice. That's another thing to take into consideration there too.
Well, again, I don't know how it is that they do their stuff. I don't know. There's a ranking system 100%.
Do they ever have disqualification finishes in New Japan or no?
Very, very, very rarely. And most of that started with Bullet Club. When Prince Devitt or Finn Balor created the Bullet Club, number one, he created the Bullet Club, and they were the first Gaijin stable. Now, what Gaijin means is non-Japanese.
Okay.
So you and I would be considered Gaijin because we're not Japanese. Bullet Club was the first ever Gaijin stable in New Japan, with wrestlers all comprised of non-Japanese backgrounds. And on top of that, they were the stable that were breaking all the rules, that, you know, they were jumping people and hitting people with weapons and stuff, where none of that was ever taking place in New Japan before, with disqualifications and interferences and stuff. Usually, if you and I have a match, it's usually a clean, no interference, nobody comes in, nobody from your team comes in, nobody from my team comes in. It's whatever. I win or you win, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Bullet Club, they changed all of that. But that being said, especially in the pay-per-view or you know, the big main events, the big events, there 9 times out of 10, there isn't any of that shenanigans going on. It's always clean.
Now, here's another question. Do they have time limits in their title matches?
Yes. Usually the main event for the heavyweight, they get a 60-minute time limit.
Is it possible they fight to a 60-minute draw and then this goes on? That could be another opening in the door to where this will build the Wrestle Kingdom.
Again, regardless whether who wins or who loses, I still see it. I still see a third match taking place. And the reason I say that is because Okada's greatest rival was Tanahashi. Now, if you know anything about New Japan, Tanahashi, number one, he's a 7-time IWGP Heavyweight Champion
I believe that's the most ever in New Japan history. Number two, Tanahashi is essentially the John Cena of New Japan.
Yeah, they actually compared, I heard, Tanahashi and Okada to like the Stone Cold and The Rock type rivalry in Japan.
Stone Cold and The Rock or John Cena, Randy Orton. I'd say more John Cena, Randy Orton. Okay. Because Okada, to me, has a lot of similarities to Randy. More so Legend Killer Randy than now.
Okay.
Or that transition from Legend Killer to now, like sort of like that in between. That's where he's at right now. But he's a face now. He used to be the heel. Now he's a face. Now, the reason of me bringing that up is because they've had a storied rivalry. And up until Wrestle Kingdom 10 of last year, Okada could never beat Tanahashi. He would beat him, but never for the big one. You understand?
Yep.
And finally, at Wrestle Kingdom 10, Okada was able to beat Tanahashi. And it's one of those matches where, even Meltzer rated it, I think he gave it 5 stars or something like that, or more. I'm not 100% sure. But I know that the Okada Omega was 6 stars for sure. But anyways, the reason of me saying that is just because they're having the sequel doesn't mean that it's just gonna be over at that. They might fight one more time down the line, and I'm assuming it's gonna be at Wrestle Kingdom 12, because Okada and Tanahashi, they've had several matches together, and it took up until Wrestle Kingdom 10 for Okada to finally be able to put Tanahashi away.
Ah, okay.
And ever since Okada beat Tanahashi, Tanahashi has been more or less relegated to the mid-card, because he was on top for so damn long, for over 10 years. He was on top.
Oh, so now he's like, he's dialed down a bit.
Now, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm comparing him even more to John Cena. Because after Cena, prior to him winning the championship against Styles back at Royal Rumble, what was Cena doing? He had over a year not chasing the heavyweight championship.
Yeah, year and a half from SummerSlam 2015 all the way up to Royal Rumble.
Yeah, when he lost it to Lesnar, right, at SummerSlam.
Or no, wait, actually, 2.5 years. I'm sorry, it was SummerSlam 2014 all the way up to Royal Rumble.
Yes.
2017, 2.5 years.
Of him not touching heavyweight championship gold, right?
Yep.
And from then, what has he been doing? He's been in the mid-card. Right? So that's more or less what they're doing with Tanahashi. As of right now, he has no belts, but it was him, Ricochet, and this other guy, Taguchi. They had won the never open weight 6-man tag team titles, which, because they have several tag titles. They have 3 different tag titles in New Japan. One is the never open weight 6-man tag, which what the open weight means, you know, there's no weight class. Anybody from any weight class can win that title, because they have a never open weight championship, and then they have the never open weight 6-man tag team championships. So anybody from any weight class can win those titles. So Tanahashi, Ricochet, and Taguchi were the 6-man champs, and they just recently lost them to, I think, Los Ingobernables de Japón, I believe. Let me double check.
Okay.
I'm thinking the perfect way to bring in New Japan coverage to the channel would be covering the June 11th event with Okada and Omega 2.
I'll be with it.
I think that should be our starting point. You can't start no bigger than that, than to cover that event with those two men going at it. I think that's where we start.
Let me see. Yeah, Los Ingobernables de Japón, they just won it back at May 3rd. So a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
They beat Taguchi, Ricochet, and Tanahashi.
Cool.
And Tanahashi, I think, with Evil right now. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, man, I'm all for it, bro. I'm all for New Japan, man. Like, they won me over, man. Within this past year of me watching.
And I think that'll be a good way to get, especially with them coming to the U.S. You know, we cover Omega Okada 2. We cover the big event in July in L.A. Maybe we get some more hardcore fans coming into the channel. We'll have some fun with it. But as of right now, let's talk about your feature news and rumor story, Sage. What do you got for us with Randy Orton and Bully Ray? Let's open up this can of worms.
All right. Hold on. Give me a second. Let me open up the page.
All right.
Before I get on to that, what I wanted to tell you about Tanahashi, after they lost the titles to Tanahashi, Ricochet, and Taguchi lost the Never Open Way 6-Man Tag Team Championships back to LIJ members Bushi, Evil, and Sanada. But on the April 29th show that they had, Tanahashi defeated Evil, and Tetsuya Naito is the IWGP Intercontinental Champion. Now, Naito's whole gimmick is he treats the championship like shit. He kicks it, he tosses it in the air, he doesn't care about it. He steps all over it, he doesn't care. And he's over as hell with the fans. The fans love him, even though he treats the title like shit. Back at Wrestle Kingdom 11, Tanahashi had challenged Naito for the belt, with Naito defeating Tanahashi. So he retained his belt. But at the April 29th episode, at the April 29th show, after Tanahashi defeated Evil, and Naito successfully defended his belt against what's this guy's name? CJ Parker. Oh, Juice Robinson. He was cutting a promo, and as he was cutting a promo, Tanahashi came out and he challenged Naito for the IWGP Intercontinental Champion again. So you see what I mean? Like, even though, you know, Wrestle Kingdom was back in January, and that was 4 or 5 months ago, even though there was that big of a span, he still was able to re-challenge him for the belt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, that just because Omega might not beat Okada at the upcoming show on June 11th, it doesn't necessarily mean that the feud is over. They can always revisit it a couple months further down the road.
I see.
Now, on to the Randy Orton news.
I'm excited for this, man. I want to hear your solid thoughts on this, man. I can't wait. I've been waiting for this. That's why I figured I'd put your story on as the main event.
All right, give me a second.
No problem, man. Hey, your first time doing news and rumors, and you got the headliner here, so this should be a good one.
It's an honor. So, it just so happens I'm also on that website that you were on earlier, Sportskeeda.
Okay.
Sportskeeda. Now, the headline says, Randy Orton takes a shot at Bubba Ray Dudley on Twitter and issues sarcastic apology afterwards.
Oh!
Now, what's the story? WWE superstar Randy Orton was evidently rubbed the wrong way by a tweet that former WWE superstar Bubba Ray Dudley, a.k.a. Bully Ray, of Ring of Honor, had posted on Twitter. The tweet was a response to an ongoing dive controversy that had been originated by Randy Orton retweeting a critical message to the independent wrestling circuit by wrestling coach Kip Rogers. Orton subsequently took to Twitter himself to not only take a shot at Dudley, but also issue a sarcastic apology after Bubba replied. Now, in case you didn't know, Bubba Ray Dudley, who left the WWE after a recent one-year stint, was recently signed with Ring of Honor under his former TNA / Impact Wrestling pseudonym, Bully Ray. He has since been working shows with Ring of Honor. Dudley had posted a tweet with an image of him diving onto his Ring of Honor opponents and had captioned the image as dive. The tweet can be seen below. This tweet was believed by some, including Randy Orton, to be directed towards Orton. Previously retweeted a message by former professional wrestler and current wrestling trainer, Rip Rogers, which criticized the independent wrestling scene and its style. The message was as follows. Every indie match now, handshake, drawn out move exchange, this is awesome chant, strike exchange, dive, no sell indie strong style, dive, more strikes, no sells, dive, flippy floppy sequence, dive, hit everyone with each other's finisher, then Humpty Dumpty, we all fall down. Ever chant, rinse and repeat, until every move is useless and means nothing. Dive, take unsafe shot that looks like shit and hurts like hell, then roll up finish. Handshake and hug after the match, everyone's hands raised, all these guys chant. Go home and type on social media thanking your opponents and company for the match and telling others that they should book these guys. Dive. Orton had retweeted the above message, simply captioning it with dive. The heart of the matter. Following Dudley's response to Orton's retweeting of Kip Rogers' message, Randy Orton decided to fire back on Twitter. The tweet that Orton decided to respond to Dudley as follows. Now this is Randy Orton tweeting here. LOL, there is a difference between a young hungry talent diving and an old out of shape vet falling.
Oh my God.
The tweet by Orton was a direct response to Bubba Ray Dudley's tweet. And he insinuated that Dudley was not only old and out of shape, but wasn't diving, but merely falling onto his opponent. Dudley then responded to Orton with a tweet of his own, stating that him falling was still better than Orton's House of Horrors match. The tweet can be seen below. Now this is Bubba Ray tweeting Randy Orton directly. Dear at Randy Orton, my tweet had zero to do with you. Looks like you were wrong, again. You're still awesome, thumbs up emoji. Then he writes, falling over House of Horrors.
Orton responded to Dudley by tweeting that he needed to issue an apology. The highly sarcastic apology by Orton can be seen below. This is Randy Orton. He went into his notes app on his phone, typed this out, then screenshotted it, and then tweeted it.
Okay.
So this is what Randy Orton wrote. Sorry to the indie marks, indie guys, and old timers who do dives to, Sorry to the indie marks, indie guys, and old timers who do dives took offense. Just having a good time over a few drinks in Denmark, closing the SmackDown Live tour while beating Raw in making over $5 million in the last 11 shows. Now I know to some that doesn't equate to a standing room only crowd of 150 people paying $8 at an armory somewhere. But in the big boy world, that's called putting asses in seats. So enjoy your flips, dives, and 20 super kicks per match. To each their own. I will go dive back into my 13th title run and get ready to flip when my bank statement comes this month. Headlock.
Oh, man.
It appears that Randy Orton indeed does not hold any love for the independent wrestling circuit. At the same time, Kip Rogers has continued firing his criticism towards the independent wrestling scene. What's next? With the controversy still continuing between WWE style and the way that the independent wrestling circuit does things, there seems to be a lot remaining to come out of this way by way of trash talking from both sides of the debate. Regardless, Randy Orton will be defending his WWE championship against Jinder Mahal at WWE's Backlash pay-per-view on May 21st, 2017. Bubba Ray Dudley, a.k.a. Bully Ray, who has stated that his ROH debut was better than WrestleMania, is probably being lined up for a singles run in the promotion. Author's take. Randy Orton has always been WWE's proverbial, quote-unquote, bad boy, and his recent exchange of messages with Bubba Ray Dudley is nothing but an addition to the long list of controversies that have had his name tied to them. It doesn't seem like this controversy will settle down anytime soon, with various indie wrestlers and promoters having also thrown their hat into the mix by tweeting responses of their own. Let's hope that this doesn't sour WWE's relation with independent talent. Randy Orton's former Evolution member Batista seemed to have been in support of him. Dave Batista posted, laughing emoji, that's my guy, !! Hashtag Evolution. Bully Ray's wife, Velvet Sky, wasn't pleased with Orton's comments on her husband's tweet. Velvet Sky tweeted, at Randy Orton, wow, what a dick thing to say. Former WWE superstar Low Ki also had his own words to say to the Viper. Low Ki tweeted, unfortunately, you're protected in the WWE. Come out to the real world and test your tantrum with adults. That's my boy Loki. So, T, what's your take on all of this? It seems to be WWE style versus independent style.
I mean, honestly, it seems to me like Randy Orton, cause, all right, I'll back up a little bit. With indie wrestling, I like what they bring to the table. It's like, you know, when I go to an indie event and I seen guys like Johnny Gargano bust their ass in the indies for years. They put on some of the best matches that you could ever see. Those high risk spots sometimes what makes the match and gives it that,
that special feeling that we don't get with WWE anymore. And it seems to me like Randy Orton, all he's doing is sticking up for the watered down, boring, generic WWE style. And, you know, I might get heat for this. I mean, but I'm just going to say it. Randy Orton, he's never really done anything that exciting in my book. He has the same generic moveset. He does the same things. I mean, he's a great wrestler. He's smooth in the ring, one of the smoothest ever. But point being, he does the same things. He's doesn't really do anything that exciting. When you look on the indies, on the other hand, you see guys willing to pull out moves out of their hats that you don't see every day, and it makes the match so much better and tells such a better story. And, you know, you got to think of it this way. Look at Bubba Ray. He doesn't have to do a dive like that, but Bubba Ray, he knows what the indie crowd is all about and what's going to make people pop. You know, seeing a veteran like that going to the top rope, going for a dive, especially at Bubba's size, I give Bubba props for even trying something like that. I mean, the man is what, in his 40s, and he's doing high-risk moves like that. I mean, he has something to be proud of. You know, he really does, in my opinion. And Bubba Ray, you know, he did what he had to do. And Orton, I just don't know why he's sticking up for the boring, generic style. Maybe that's because Orton could be boring a lot of times himself, even though I like what he brings. But it's like, come on, Randy. These guys are busting their ass and paving the way for the future of wrestling, and he's just ripping on them. I mean, that's, you know, my take. I feel that that's the future of pro wrestling, and Orton's just ripping it apart and making a mockery of it. I'm glad that these indie guys are standing their ground and voicing their words back to Orton.
Even Will Ospreay had tweeted something in response to Orton.
Oh, wow.
Let me see if I could find what Will Ospreay had said. Let me see.
I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Why does Randy feel the need to stick his nose into this? You know, they're doing their own thing. They're trying to make it in the business. You know, it's like, sorry, Randy, that not everybody had, you know, the path that you had, that you had a family that grew up in the business and you were able to just get right in. When these guys, you know, not saying Randy Orton didn't earn his stripes, Orton did earn his stripes because he's talented, but still, these guys are trying to earn their stripes and make it to the big boy promotion and big boy wrestling that Randy Orton's speaking of. So it's like, cut these kids a break, man.
Let me see. How was it that he tweeted?
Those high-risk moves and those dives is what made Daniel Bryan the performer that he was and the legend that he is. And just like Johnny Gargano, his high-risk style of wrestling is what draw the eyes of WWE to bring him into NXT now. Look at what he's doing. And I hope to God that this isn't going to sour on the relationship of WWE with indie talent, because if it does, you know, what's going to happen in the future here?
Dude, they already started producing dive shirts.
Wow. Didn't take long.
Because I'm looking at Will Ospreay's and he put dive t-shirts available at Will Ospreay. BigCartel.com. Oh man, this is awesome. But go ahead, finish up what you're saying. Oh, I found it.
All right.
He didn't say anything bad, but he tweeted in response to the to what Orton said about him counting $5 million in the last 11 days and blah, blah, blah. Oh, no. Sorry, it was in response to the Kip Rogers, whatever the hell his name is.
Okay.
And he said, oh, every indie match now, handshake, drawn out move, exchange. This is awesome. Dive. He put, Will Ospreay tweeted, he said, yeah, but I'm having fun and making money, so I'm happy. So I'm happy. ... Dive. That's it. Something simple. And what I was going to say is that, to me, this all goes back to that argument that we had last year with when it was Will Ospreay versus Ricochet. I don't know if you've seen that match, but you need to do yourself a favor and watch that match. Will Ospreay versus Ricochet, best of the Super Juniors. What is it, 2015 or 2016? I think it's 2016.
I'll go back and look at it. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, if you watch it, it caused so much controversy last year. A lot of the old timers felt, hey, that's not wrestling. That looks more like a choreographed stunt than wrestling. He was like, it looked like you guys were practicing all these moves. There was no selling. And anyways, in short, this basically led to Will Ospreay versus Vader match. I don't know if you recall that, but
oh, wow.
That led to a match between Vader and Will Ospreay because Vader started talking a whole bunch of shit on Twitter to Ospreay and to Ricochet, and it ended up in them having a match. And unfortunately, Will Ospreay lost to fucking Vader. Now that I know Vader's situation, it sort of makes me believe, oh, they just gave it to him because that motherfucker's dying anyways. So that's sort of what I fucking felt. But regardless, I feel like this stems all the way back to that. Into what exactly is wrestling. And, you know, wrestling is subjective. It's subjective. Some people like the very technical style. Some people don't like technical style at all, and they like the fucking death matches, the hardcore with bleeding and weapons and chairs and tables and ladders. Some people like that. Some people like the luchador style, which is all, you know, high flying off the rope stuff and little to no, you know what I mean?
Yep.
T, you with me?
Yep, I'm with you, man.
You with me, T? You listening?
Yep. Can you hear me?
It's sort of like cutting in and out, bro.
Am I coming through?
I hear you now.
All right, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, bro. All
right, so, you know, there's, in my opinion, there's something for everybody in wrestling, you know? You like women's wrestling, hey, they have that, you know? You like comedy wrestling, hey, we have people like Grado, and we have people like Cole Cabana for that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, That being said, I find it almost funny that Orton would say something like this, because a lot of the people that he worked with came from the indies. You know, a lot of people came from the indies. Daniel Bryan, who he's had some of his best matches with, came from the indies. And in Daniel Bryan's matches, he and CM Punk sort of, I guess, pioneered the whole quote-unquote indie style in WWE, where, you know, they have their big spots and their big matches. I mean, in their matches, and all of a sudden, somebody's on the outside and they hit the ropes and they do the dive onto them, right?
Yeah.
I remember it being CM Punk and Daniel Bryan to sort of popularize that in WWE. But that all comes from indie wrestling. And a couple months ago, I remember I went on Reddit, and you know me, I use Reddit a lot, and I use, you know, whenever I don't know something or whenever I don't understand something, I always go to Reddit and look to see if I could either find an answer or I make a post asking the question to see the answers that I get back. And I remember I asked, well, what's the difference between Japanese style, WWE style, and indie style? And, you know, they told me, they were like, well, you know, in WWE style is a little bit more psychology, is a little bit more selling, and selling in the case of you get hit with a move, you gotta really sell it like that move really fucked you up. In the indies, it's more like high octane, go, 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 go. But again, it all depends on the wrestler and all depends on who their opponent is and the type of shit that you like. You know? Like, my boy Anthony, he's huge on ECW. And since we don't have ECW no more, the next best thing, he likes CZW. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
Oh yeah, I've definitely heard of CZW.
Yeah, that's where your boy Ambrose came from, you know? He was in CZW for a while, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, the point that I'm trying to get at is indie style influenced a lot of what we see today in WWE, especially with the fact that a lot of the wrestlers, a lot of the current people on the roster came from that. People like Ambrose, Neville, Bryan, Punk, people like Tommy End, people like Sami Zayn, people like Kevin Owens, you know, all of these people, all of these guys came from the independents.
And can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now. Now, all of these guys came from the
independents. Hold on, I'll be right back in.
Yep. You hear me? You hear me? Yo.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. I just had to switch my settings because I came back on the laptop.
All right. So yeah, like I was saying, you know, a lot of guys, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Neville, Austin Aries, TJP, you know, Danny Bryan, CM Punk, Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe. A lot of these guys came from the indies and made their names in the indies. And they brought that style with them to WWE. And not all of them had a fucking silver spoon in their mouth the way that Randy Orton did.
Exactly.
And because of their dad and their granddad, they're automatically brought up into the fucking business, in the WWE, in the big leagues. He didn't have to go to the indies. He was already in the fucking developmental while he was in fucking training.
Exactly. He just bypassed it.
He bypassed all of that. So it sort of pisses me off and sort of makes me feel, you know, I'm not a wrestler, but I will feel fucking offended for him having to say this shit because yeah, I had to work my way up. Yeah, I had to work my way from the ground up. I had to start from the bottom. Like Drake says in that song, I had to start from the bottom, but not Randy Orton. That motherfucker never had a struggle. He never had to start from the bottom. That motherfucker had it made for him, bro. Made for him. And not only was he made for it, because yeah, okay, not all second and third generation superstars become a big deal. Like look at Bruno Sammartino's son. His son didn't get a major push. He wasn't a top guy in the company. You know? Look at Curtis Axel. His dad is fucking Mr. Perfect. That motherfucker, when's the last time you even seen him on TV? I don't even remember. I don't even remember when's the last time we seen Curtis Axel.
As far as in a match, I couldn't tell you. I know he was on TV, backstage? What was it, a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, just in some stupid skit, but.
Yeah, but he's not taken seriously. And
no.
And like I said, not all second and third generation superstars are taken seriously or made to be felt like a big deal. But Randy Orton did. Randy Orton was a big deal. He's the current fucking champion right now. And he's been with them for over 10 years already. So of course Vince is high on him, but this guy is a fucking, he's a piece of shit. Like, his attitude is a piece of shit, and I hate how they try to, WWE's resident bad boy. He ain't no fucking bad boy. He's a fucking brat. That's what he is. He's a fucking brat. He ain't no bad boy. He's a brat. He's a spoiled-ass little brat that when he doesn't get his way, he fucking bitches and complains and throws his temper tantrum. That's why I like that Loki told him that. He's like, how about you come out here in the real world and you try that? And you know what? Guys like Randy Orton, whether they stay with WWE or not, they'll never leave because they know damn well that if he comes to the Indies, he gonna get chewed in with John Cena. John Cena comes to the Indies, he's gonna get eaten alive. He will not survive in the Indies because us fans will let them know. Roman Reigns, he could never survive outside of WWE.
Oh.
Never, never. They'll bring the fucking pitchforks and the fire and the torches to try to take his ass down.
Oh yeah, the big angry mob.
Yeah, and people like Orton can't survive outside of WWE. Hell no, because he's born and bred WWE style. I don't even think he knows what real indie style is. Cause all he knows is WWE style. He never had to go to Japan and learn strong style. He didn't have to go to Mexico and learn the lucha style. Cause all he knows is one style. All he knows is that. And that's one thing that I hate, that WWE feels like their style is the only style or the best style. And no, that's what makes wrestling so great, is that there's numerous different styles. Nobody ever said, oh, well, WWE is just the only way. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. What makes WWE different from everybody else is that mixture of everything. And that's how it should be. It should be a mixture of everything. That's why back in the 80s, to me, the in-ring wrestling sucked. They had some of the best characters. The characters were awesome. You know, they cut some of the best promos. You know, some of the best larger-than-life characters. But that's because scripts for them, right? Back in the Hogan era, right? In the Golden era, right?
Yep.
Nobody was writing scripts for them, so they had to come up with this on their own. However, the in-ring was absolute dog shit. The in-ring wrestling sucked dick back then. But that's because everybody was all juiced up on fucking roids and coke, and they were fucking all jacked up. And they couldn't move. They sucked. The wrestling was garbage back then. I fall asleep watching that wrestling today.
Yeah, well, now, it was all about the wrestlers being spectacles. You know, like, they would mm-hmm. come out and they'd be like a showpiece and be like, oh, yes, look at how big this guy is. It's like they were just brought out on
bodybuilders
to be a showpiece. Like, look
just
at
because,
the
just because they were big, that's it.
They got the biggest and best physiques in the world. This is the World Wrestling Federation. And Vince is still stuck on that shit. That's why Roman Reigns is where he is. Yeah. 'Cause he's got the big build. He's got the fucking greased back, soaking wet hair. And he's got that pretty boy look with his fucking duck lips. With that look that he has. That's why Roman Reigns is where he is.
So that's why I was so pissed off at everything that Orton said, and this Kip motherfucking guy too.
Yeah,
I hate that type of shit, man.
It's just, man, some people just never get it. And, you know, it's funny. It's like everybody WWE, when they would say, oh, well, that's just Randy being Randy. That's Randy's attitude. It's like bullshit. You know, he's – that's like in UFC, okay, when Tito Ortiz would act like a bitch. Oh, he's the Huntington Beach bad boy. Now in WWE, Orton wants to act like a bitch.
This guy that used to shit in people's bags and sandwiches.
Yeah.
People's bags, bro. This is a model citizen to you? This is what a champion does? Right? He shits in people's bags?
And didn't he also go AWOL in the military?
He's a piece of shit, man. And he always has been. And he's another guy who, just because Vince is high on him and Vince loves him and his daddy was in the business and his daddy was one of Vince's butt buddies, because I hope you know Orton's uncle, I forget his name, but Orton's uncle.
Barry?
Yeah. Barry, Pat Patterson wanted him to be his little ring boy. Play with him.
Yeah.
And Barry was like, nah, Barry wasn't with it. He got sexually harassed by people like Pat Patterson and I believe P.S. Mike Ways and that. And
I remember the whole thing ended up on the Phil Donahue show where they had Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Barry Orton, and they had other just workers that would work there. And Vince McMahon had to go out on Phil Donahue, and of course, you know, he played attorney and tried to talk his way out of it and did what he could, because, you know, just classic Vince McMahon, just like what he did with Snuka. Mm-hmm. And it's like, come on, Vince, you know there's bad shit going on in your company. Just like with the steroid trial, but somehow he still got off of that too. I don't get it, man.
Anyways, point is, Randy has always had a silver spoon in his mouth, and he's always gotten away with murder.
To me, you know what? I'll actually give even more credit to Shane McMahon for being Vince McMahon's son. No doubt he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. But you know what? That man will go out there and wrestle, and
he earned the respect of the boys.
Yeah, he even does, you know, the indie style sometimes.
He does the dives.
He'll do the dives.
Motherfucker, I wouldn't be surprised if he helped pioneer half of the shit that the people in the indies do when he used to throw himself off the freaking Titantron.
Yeah.
And this man has the audacity to, dives. You know what?
Like,
fuck Randy Orton. I already disliked him. I never liked him ever. And especially him beating fucking Wyatt for the title at Mania. And this right here gives me even more of a reason to fucking dislike him.
Yeah. And, you know, to go to Shane McMahon, I know a lot of people, a lot of the hardcore wrestling fans are saying, oh, Shane McMahon should not be, you know, in a match with AJ Styles. You know, this is just because it's McMahon's son. But you know what? Shane went out there.
Same people saying that was an amazing match.
Yep. And Shane McMahon went out there and he proved that, yes, he did deserve to be out there with AJ Styles. And they put on the fucking match of the night. The best in-ring action, that you could have gotten. And you know what? Shane McMahon didn't even need to do a leap of faith, the death-defying leap, to prove that he belonged in that spot with Styles. He still earned his fucking stripes. When he had Styles come out on SmackDown and even shake his hand, he earned the respect from a man like AJ.
Yeah, so I don't know. I I'm not a wrestler, but that offended me and pissed me off, the fact that this man is talking all this nonsense.
Oh, it's,
but you know what?
It's insane, bro.
Because WWE style is not law. And WWE style isn't the only style there is to watch, which is why, as I was expressing to you prior to me talking about this story, I'm starting to become an even bigger fan of New Japan. Because in New Japan, there isn't this politics like there is here. There aren't people who are chosen ones, who are picked because of their DNA or picked because, you know, they were anybody's butt buddies. There's none of that in New Japan. In New Japan, hard hitting style, and there's respect over there. There's respect. Ain't nobody shitting in your bag. Ain't nobody shitting in your sandwich.
Yeah.
It was just for laughs. There's none of that in New Japan. There's respect over there. There's respect and there's honor.
Yeah, there's no immature high school hate.
A man like Randy Orton. Yeah, exactly. There isn't none of that stupid ass hazing over there. I mean, I'm sure it goes on. I'm pretty sure it goes on in the sense of, hey, carry my bags. Hey, cool, fine. But ain't nobody gonna be shitting in my fucking food.
Yeah, or sexually harassing you in the fucking shower, like JBL.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you know what? A person like Randy Orton, a person like John Cena, a person like Roman Reigns, none of them could survive in the circuit. But in Japan, any of them go to Japan, they'll come back like little bitches.
Oh yeah, Japan will show them, you know, what it's all about. I mean, they definitely have the top product at this point in time. As far as America, I kid you not, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, as far as America here in the US, I think Ring of Honor has the best in-ring wrestling that you could find in the US.
Agreed.
And I love how they pride themselves.
But anyways, that's...
They kept it in their name, you know, Ring of Honor Wrestling, the best wrestling on the planet. Like, their company is built around the honor of wrestling, and that's how it should be. And that's why I'll always give Ring of Honor their due. Always.
It's really sad that there's this level of cockiness coming out of this man's mouth, you know? The business is built up off respect. It's built up off of respect, off of honor, you know? Respecting each other's craft out here, shitting on anything that isn't his product, you know, and his
exactly.
League. That's like me driving a Honda and somebody else shitting all over me because they're driving a fucking Mercedes. Yo, it's not a Mercedes. But how about I like Honda because it's a cheaper alternative. If my car breaks down, I don't have to spend the amount of money to get my car fixed, you know, because maybe I can't afford it, or maybe I just enjoy it. Maybe it drives better, but it's my opinion, because objective, just like wrestling is.
Yeah.
It's all to your liking. It's not, oh, this is the way that it is, and this is what you have to like. I absolutely hate that mindset. I hate that. I hate that so much.
Me too, brother. Well,
it's so backwards, man. It's so backwards.
It is.
2017, and we're supposed to be bigger than that. We're supposed to be smarter than that. And people are still thinking this way. It's a sad day in the world of wrestling when people are saying that. But you know what? If it's something that I expect to come out of the mouth of fucking bitch ass Randy Orton. He's always been the guy to get his way. Because if he don't get his way, he throws a fucking bitch ass temper tantrum like a little ass kid. That's what he does, and he's always been that way. The little high school jock, the little high school bully to get the girl and to have the car and to have this and that. It's always been me dislike him even more.
Oh, I hear you, bro. I agree 100%. But we do have
thoughts on that.
Huh? What was that, bud? Can you hear me?
Thoughts on that?
Oh, I totally agree. You know, with everything you said, like, yeah, that's Randy Orton 100%, and you know, he'll always have that mindset. I'm sure we'll hear something else from him down the road again. It seems like he always sticks his nose into something. So, you know, I'm sure down the road we'll be hearing from him again, but that's exactly how he is. He was born with the silver spoon in his mouth. He's always gotten his way. He didn't have to go through the indies and earn his stripes the way these guys had to earn theirs, and he just, he can't deal with it. He just knows WWE, like you said, and that's the craft that he's always gonna find most suitable when there's better stuff out there. But man, we got two more segments, quick ones here.
You wanna move on?
Yep. Let's go for, Wrestler of the Week. And I'm gonna pass it on to you for you to give us your Wrestler of the Week.
Wait, so I'm gonna have mine, you're gonna have yours, right?
Yep.
Go ahead, no, you go first, cause I spoke for too long. You go first.
If I'm gonna go with Wrestler of the Week, man, a guy that really made an impact, and I think it was perfect, Marty Scurll, man, the villain Marty Scurll.
There we go. That's my choice.
I think he's the Wrestler of the Week, man. You know what? After Adam Cole had his match, I forgot who he faced because I didn't see the show. But
oh man, you gotta watch. It's an amazing show.
Who did he face, Adam Cole?
So, as I mentioned earlier, Ring of Honor had a show here in New York, which is my hometown. They had a show here, which is Ring of Honor's War of the Worlds. Now, War of the Worlds is a yearly annual show that a Ring of Honor does, it's a crossover show, and New Japan Pro Wrestling, where stars from New Japan Honor, and you know, they face some Ring of Honor stars, and weekend Adam Cole had a match Tanahashi,
which, as I mentioned earlier, Hiroshi Tanahashi is basically the John Cena of New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's up there with the levels of John Cena in terms of popularity, in terms of merch sales, in terms of even in terms of championships. He's a 7-time IWGP heavyweight champion, and trust me, very many people have that track record in that company. Not very many people win it that many times. The only other guy that I could probably think of is Antonio Inoki. That's the only other guy that I think has won it that many times. Anyways, point is, he had a match against Tanahashi, losing end. At the end, the Young Bucks came out. Now, the Young Bucks have a YouTube channel, and it's called Being the Elite. And on their YouTube channel, they have little stories or little that they cut, that they make, and an angle that has been building up for the last 4 or 5 months has been a feud between Kenny Omega and Adam Cole. As we all know that the Elite consists of Kenny Omega, Jackson, the Young Bucks, and together the three of them make up the Elite, which is like a subgroup inside of the Bullet Club. Now, of course, they're usually the Elite States, usually in Japan or overseas in the UK. Now, in Ring of Honor, the Young Bucks and Adam Cole make up what they call Super Click, a little by that's their little subgroup. Now, the Young Bucks and, well, Adam Cole has been jealous that the Young Bucks are a lot more closer to
you still there, Sage? Hold on, your screen froze up here. Alright, what's going on? Let's see if we can get
so
Sage
back.
Back
in like February, March. There was a show back in February, March where Cole and Kenny Omega had a team up. I believe it was against Okada and Ishii as well. Anyways, point is, at the end of the show, Adam Cole and Kenny Omega was cutting a promo, and they seemed to be a lot of tensions there, and people thought, oh man, they're gonna kick the group, they're gonna boot them out. Never happened.
Let's see. Oh, what's going on here? I can't hear Sage again.
Series. So much so that he ended up, quote unquote, poisoning Nick Jackson. He put something in his drink and Nick ended up getting sick. Now, he was legit sick in real life, but they used that sickness to make it part of the kayfabe storyline.
Adam Cole put
something in Nick's. He legit got sick. Nick Jackson legit got sick, but they made it part of the storyline and had Adam Cole put something in his drink to make it, you know, part of it. Now, a featured person that has been on that show was Marty Scurll. And he's been such a great character on the Being the Elite series. Highly entertaining, very funny.
Yeah, Marty Scurll. Awesome. Marty Scurll has definitely been really good at what he's been doing. Let's see, what's going on with Sage here again? I see his thing froze up. Is he still there with us?
Adam Cole. Hey, you hear me?
Yeah, now you're back. You froze for like 30 seconds.
Okay, so I was saying that all of us know that Adam Cole's contract was going to be up with Ring of Honor soon. And there's been much speculation that he's going to leave and he's going to either come to NXT or he was going to come to WWE. Regardless, the consensus is that he's not going to stay re-sign with Ring of Honor, that he was going to leave. And this is a rumor that has been going on for months now. Finally, this past weekend, we finally got the confirmation that Adam Cole is indeed leaving and his final appearances by you, Todd.
Say that again, bud.
Todd.
Yo. Can you hear me?
He said, what's the promotion that's over by you in Cleveland?
Oh, AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling. He is gonna be, Adam Cole's gonna be what was that? Am I coming through? Alright, I hope my audio's coming through okay. It's gonna be night two. Oh, here we go. Can you hear me?
You hear me?
Yep. Yeah, I can hear you.
Yo, Todd.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Bro, you keep freezing, brother.
I know, the same thing was happening with you. I don't know what's going on with the stream here. Am I coming through okay now?
Now you're fine, but like, in the middle of you talking, you keep freezing.
Okay. Hopefully it works now. Adam Cole's gonna be a part of AIW Absolute Intense Wrestling.
When do you reset your router, man?
I reset it, I would say about a week. Since I did it last, about a week.
You should try doing it more often, bro.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyways.
But
what's the promotion that's locally to you, AIW?
Yep, Absolute Intense Wrestling in Cleveland, Ohio. Adam Cole's going to be a part of the JT Lightning Invitational Tournament on the second night. They haven't announced yet who he's going to face, but he's going to be down there for meet and greet, and I think he's going to actually have a match too. So, and it doesn't surprise me because Adam Cole's girlfriend, real-life girlfriend, Britt Baker, she's an independent wrestler as well out of Pittsburgh. She wrestles for AIW in Cleveland, so I'm sure Britt Baker got Adam Cole a booking down there in AIW. So he's going to be there on, I believe, May 27th is when Adam Cole's going to be there. So definitely exciting. I wish I could be down there for it, but I don't know if I'll be able to make it. It depends if maybe my buddy, if he wants to go to that show, but it's
definitely... tickets aren't sold out. Tickets aren't sold out. You should definitely go, man.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one, especially when I saw that last night. I believe AIW put that up and confirmed Adam Cole. So that was a big deal. But yeah, when you were talking about Marty Scurll,
okay.
It, Did Adam Cole actually win his match against Tanahashi, or did he lose?
I believe he lost his match against Tanahashi. Now, what I was building to, was, it's been teased and teased and teased on there being the Elite Series, and as soon as Adam Cole's match was done, the Young Bucks hit the ring, and the Young Bucks look as if they're gonna hit Adam Cole with double super kicks. They go and they embrace him and they hug him, and the fans start cheering and applauding and filling the ring with the, with streamers. And all of a sudden the lights go out, and on the screen appears Kenny Omega. And I'm trying to see if I could find what Kenny Omega said to Adam Cole. Can I play the video?
No,
they got video online.
Unfortunately, we can't because of copywriting with Ring of Honor.
Exactly, word for word, what it was that he said. Oh, no, no, no. That's Ring of Honor footage. I'm not going to play Ring of Honor footage. Ring of Honor footage, are you crazy? But people uploaded from their phones. So I don't know if that counts.
It might still count because that was recorded by Ring of Honor. It was a recorded show. Now, if it was a house show, it might not have been because it's a house show, but this one took place.
Okay, here, I found what he said.
Oh, says,
says, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks kicked Adam Cole out of the Bullet Club tonight at War of the Worlds. And his vacant spot was quickly filled by another villain, Marty Scurll. Following his loss on Friday night to Hiroshi Tanahashi, Adam was joined in the ring by the Young Bucks for a group hug. However, the lights went out and Kenny Omega appeared on screen. Kenny said Cole's year-long run with the group may have been historic, but like all fairy tales, it needed a hero and a villain. The lights then came on and Scurll was in the ring, holding a Bullet Club umbrella. The Bucks proceeded to super kick Adam and leave him in the ring KO'd. Skrull hit Cole with the umbrella afterwards and then held him up for the Bucks to kiss his cheeks. In case you forgot, the group gave a similar treatment to its former leader, AJ Styles, just before he left for WWE. Could this mean Cole is on his way out as well? Time will tell, baby. And Jesus Christ, man. Once, because I didn't watch the show live. I saw it the following day. But once I saw the headline, or I think I was on YouTube, once I saw that video was uploaded of there being a new Bullet Club member reviewed, I immediately knew who it was. And I clicked that video so fast, I think I almost cracked my screen on my phone. Clicked on it so fast, I knew exactly who it was. And Jesus Christ, man, that umbrella with the Bullet Club logo on it. It's funny because I was talking to my best friend, Anthony, about it, man. And I told him, I'm like, bro, because I, you know, he watches the Being the Elite series sometimes, and you know, I showed him some videos prior to Marty joining, and I told him, like, man, if Marty joins, it'll be so cool. Can you imagine him coming out with the umbrella with the Bullet Club logo on it? Exactly what they knew what they were doing because they put the logo right on the umbrella, as I imagined. Now, the only other thing that I can imagine is if they use his little, witch doctor mask and they put the logo on that mask too. Oh man, it would be absolutely amazing.
That was perfect. And
It was perfect in every way, man. Every way.
I watched the whole thing, you know, on YouTube with the Young Bucks coming down to the ring, Kenny Omega's promo, Marty Scurll coming out, and just everything. That was a moment in time, and that, for me, deserves Wrestler of the Week for Marty Scurll.
Absolutely, 9 times out of 10. And I'm just so disappointed that I wasn't aware that this show was taking place here in New York. Otherwise, I would have gotten tickets from me and my boy Anthony. But unfortunately, I've been going through some shit, so I haven't even been paying attention to any of that. But, man, I wish I would have been there in person. Oh, my God. Man. Especially for that. And the last time they was here was another epic time, because that's when I think it was – that was when, I believe, Matt Hardy challenged the Young Bucks, for the titles. Prior to them coming to WWE, when they showed up on screen and challenged the Young Bucks.
Yeah, at Final Battle, I believe, or something
yep.
like that. Yeah.
Final Battle was the last time that they were here. Man. God, I wish I would have gone to both of those shows.
So good. Just incredible. And, it's funny that we had both the same pick for Wrestler of the Week, man. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
But now, man, we both picked Scurll. Now let's move on to our closing segment of the night, and that is WWE Match of the Week for last week.
I don't know. What's your pick?
Man, my pick, I think without a doubt, had to be from last week's 205 Live, that match with Mustafa Ali and Tony Nese. That match was, I even remember doing it on commentary with you. Like, that match was, that was awesome. It was just an incredible, incredible match. For 205 Live, like, you know, you would think it'd be something from maybe Raw or from SmackDown or even the main event of 205 Live, but just a middle match of 205 Live with Mustafa Ali and Tony Nese. That was a great match, man. Both men really shined. You know, it was just awesome. I wish I could remember who got the win 100%. Now I feel like a fool.
What's that? You know, In the 205 Live is your pick?
Yeah, with Mustafa Ali and Tony Nese.
Mustafa versus who? Tony Nese?
Yep.
Now, I'm stuck on two. But on WWE Raw. What was last week's Raw? Five what? What was the date on 5/8/27? Now, if I remember correctly, wasn't the main event a triple threat?
Oh no, that was Raw from May 1st.
It was May 1st, last week's episode?
Yeah, that was the previous week.
Wait, so what was last week's main event? I think it was the triple threat, man. It was Bray Wyatt versus Ambrose.
Yeah, that's right.
Otherwise, I was going to say it was that triple threat match.
That's right, because I was just going to look it up.
What was the triple threat match? It was Rollins versus who?
Balor and Miz. That was from May 1st. That was from the...
It was Rollins, Balor, and who? Miz?
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so no. So... my match of the week, past week, I'd have to go right back to Ring of Honor then. It was Will Ospreay versus Jay White.
Oh, seen nice.
That match. That match was absolutely out freaking standing. Now, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination a fan of Jay White. I barely even know who he is because I don't watch Ring of Honor on a weekly basis. I watch it here and there, but I try to make it a thing to watch all of their pay-per-views. And I'm not very familiar with Jay White, but this past week when I watched War of the Worlds, I actually saw it yesterday, the War of the Worlds pay-per-view, because I split it up. I saw one half yesterday, and I saw the other half the day before yesterday, so Saturday and Sunday. Jesus Christ, what a phenomenal match. Phenomenal match. Ospreay picked up the victory, but it was a phenomenal match. Now, I'll read a review that somebody posted.
Nice.
Because they put like a top 10 matches of the show, like from worst to best. Or from, well, just an order of which was, you know, the best to worst. And I completely agree, man, because thinking back on this match, it was absolutely amazing. Now it says, this is somebody's review that they put. It's pretty short. It's just like a paragraph.
Okay.
It says, simply put, this match was outstanding. Will Ospreay and Jay White meshed very well together in this contest. Ospreay is a high-flying marvel, and seeing him in this match against White's hard-hitting style was a treat. Jay White's excursion to Ring of Honor has been a successful one, and if he were staying longer, the victory here should have been his. By all counts, this was White's best performance in ROH to date, and I hope to continue to see this from him moving forward. This is a must-see match, easily worth the price of the whole show, and is the discussion for match of the year. You hear this?
Wow.
That's very high praise. Very high praise. And not to mention that that match was just the day after Will Ospreay's 24th birthday. So Will Ospreay, even on his birthday, putting on phenomenal matches, not taking any day off. And another reason why I picked this match purposefully as well, not only was it a phenomenal match to begin with, but based off of the whole topic with the whole Randy Orton and the indie stuff thing, this is an indie match. Even though technically Ring of Honor is not an indie promotion because they are backed by a freaking $1 million company in Sinclair Productions or...
Oh, Sinclair Broadcasting?
Sinclair Broadcast Station. So technically they're not an independent company, but independent wrestlers, because Ospreay wrestles for New Japan, he wrestles for Ring of Honor, and he has tons of indie promotions. But sort of to add salt to the little to Randy Orton's little rant about indie wrestling, I chose this match as well.
Awesome, man. Well, yours is Ospreay and White with Ospreay.
This match shows you can have a match of the year contender flippy shit and dives all the time. And this match had a lot of it. And it's still a match of the year contender. So absolutely. Fuck Randy Orton. My match of the week is Will Ospreay versus Jay White.
Awesome. And mine going with Mustafa Ali.
I'm telling you, T, you need to do yourself a favor and find this match, bro. Trust me, bro. You will not be disappointed.
I will, bro. I'm sure.
What's that?
I definitely will, man. For sure. I'm sure it was better than my pick of,
I mean, dude, I'd rewatch the whole pay-per-view with you, bro. You hear me?
Yep. Yeah, I can hear you.
I said I'd rewatch the whole pay-per-view with you if I could, man.
Now I'd love to, man.
That's how good this match is. Matter of fact, you could see highlights of it. You could see highlights of it, but I don't think you could find the whole match on YouTube.
Well, I'll check it out, man. I'll see if I can find it, or if not, I'll check out the highlights. It sounds like it was better than my pick of Mustafa Ali and Tony Nese, with Ali getting the win with that reverse 450. But some good stuff all around. But man, we did it. First News and Rumors podcast with you and I, we got it in the books.
Yeah, man. Hopefully there's a lot more where that came from.
Yeah, I plan on making this a weekly thing where we sit down and get together and talk about the biggest and best in the pro wrestling world, give you guys a little something more than just Raw and SmackDown coverage every week. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. Any last words, man, before I go off air?
Absolutely, man. So you want to close this out?
Yep. You got any last statement you want to say before I close this out?
I mean, if you guys have not seen Will Ospreay versus Jay White, I recommend it. Highly recommend it. Really, really good match. Especially for a week that's been pretty dull in wrestling. In ring wise, definitely do yourselves a favor and watch that match. And definitely do yourself a favor and watch that, Marty Scurll joining the Bullet Club and kicking out Adam Cole. It was absolutely phenomenal, man. Phenomenal.
Oh, I highly suggest that to anybody. That was a great moment that will stand the test of time in pro wrestling. And man, I got to tell you, great, great stuff. And I want to thank you for being here tonight, bud. It was awesome.
Hey, man. It's always a pleasure, bro.
And we'll be back with you sometime this week for another News and Rumors podcast.
You want to close us out?
Yep. We'll be back with you guys later on this week for another News and Rumors podcast. So keep it tuned in here. I got some, I got an interview coming on Wednesday night for episode number 55 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast with independent wrestling women's superstar Gemma Cross. So make sure you guys tune in to that on Wednesday night, May 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And, that should be a great episode, a great podcast. So tune in for that. And then, Sage and I will be back sometime this week for another News and Rumors podcast. And, let's see, what else do we got? Tomorrow we got SmackDown Live and 205 Live. So lots of good stuff to, talk about there. And, we're gonna have some fun this week, ladies and gentlemen. Backlash, previewed predictions, all kinds of good stuff coming up. So make sure you join us for that. For, Sage, I'm Big T. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight. And, we will talk to you again very soon. And always remember, if you want the best, and I mean the absolute best, in all of wrestling talk, as far as on YouTube.com and on podcasting, on iTunes and Podomatic, even on BeyondTheRingWithBigT.com, always make sure to think beyond the ring. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and we will see you on our next News and Rumors podcast. And join me Wednesday night, May 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern time for my interview with independent wrestling women superstar Gemma Cross. I love you all. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will talk to you soon. Good night, everybody.